The brothers visited Australia in 1876, and on August 24 gave their first public essay Tilda Copyright Ants in Melbourne. William died in Sydney in July, 1877. Throughout their career, the Davenport brothers excited the deep envy and malice of the conjuring fraternity. Maskline, with amazing effrontery, pretended to have exposed them in England. His claims in this direction have been well answered by Dr. George Sexton, a former editor of the Spiritual magazine, who described in public, in the presence of Mr. Maskline, how his tricks were done, and comparing them with the results achieved by the Davenports, said, "The two bear about as much resemblance to each other as the productions of the poet close to the sublime and glorious dramas of the immortal Bard of Avon." Still, the conjurers made more noise in public than the spiritualists, and with the press to support them, they made the general public believe that the Davenport brothers had been exposed. Address at Cavendish Rooms, London, June 15, 1873. In announcing the death in America of Ira Davenport in 1911, Light comments on the outpouring of journalistic ignorance for which it furnished the opportunity. The Daily News is quoted as saying of the brothers, "They made the mistake of appearing as sorcerers instead of as honest conjurers. If, like their conqueror, Maskline, they had thought of saying, 'It's so simple,' the brethren might have achieved not only fortune but respectability." In reply to this, Light asks why, if they were mere conjurers and not honest believers in their mediumship, did the Davenport brothers endure hardships, insults, and injuries, and suffer the indignities that were put upon them, when by renouncing their claims to mediumship they might have been respectable and rich? An inevitable remark on the part of those who are not able to detect trickery is to ask what elevating purpose can be furthered by phenomena such as those observed with the Davenports. The well-known author and sturdy spiritualist, William Howitt, has given a good answer. Are these who play tricks and fling about instruments spirits from heaven? Can God really send such? Yes, God sends them, to teach us this, if nothing more, that he has servants of all grades and tastes ready to do all kinds of work, and he has here sent what you call low and harlequin spirits to a low and very sensual age. Had he sent anything higher, it would have gone right over the heads of their audiences. As it is, 9/10 cannot take in what they see. It is a sad reflection that the Davenports are probably the greatest mediums of their kind that the world has ever seen, as suffered throughout their lives from brutal opposition and even persecution. Many times they were in danger of their lives. One is forced to think that there could be no clearer evidence of the influence of the dark forces of evil than the prevailing hostility to all spiritual manifestations. Touching this aspect, Mr. Randall says, "There seems to be a sort of chronic dislike, almost hatred, in the minds of some persons toward any and everything spiritual. It seems as if it were a vapor floating in the air, a kind of mental spore flowing through the spaces, and breathed in by the great multitude of humankind, which kindles a rankly poisonous fire in their hearts against all those whose mission it is to bring peace on earth and goodwill to men. The future men and women of the world will marvel greatly at those now living, when they shall, as they will, read that the Davenports, and all other mediums, were forced to encounter the most inveterate hostility, that they, and the writer among them, were compelled to endure horrors baffling description, for no other offense than trying to convince the multitude that they were not beasts that perish and leave no sign, but immortal, deathless, grave surviving souls. Mediums alone are capable of demonstrating the fact of man's continued existence after death, and yet, strange inconsistency of human nature, the very people who persecute these, their truest and best friends, and fairly hound them to premature death or despair, are the very ones who freely lavish all that wealth can give upon those whose office it is merely to guess at human immortality." Biography, p. 82. In discussing the claims of various professional magicians to have exposed or imitated the Davenports, Sir Richard Burton said, "I have spent a great part of my life in Oriental lands, and have seen there many magicians. Lately I have been permitted to see and be present at the performances of Messrs. Anderson and Tolmach. The latter showed, as they profess, clever conjuring, but they do not even attempt what the Messrs. Davenport and Fay succeed in doing, for instance, the beautiful management of the musical instruments. Finally, I have read and listened to every explanation of the Davenport tricks hitherto placed before the English public, and, believe me, if anything would make me take that tremendous jump from matter to spirit, it is the utter and complete unreason of the reasons by which the manifestations are explained. It is to be remarked that the Davenports themselves, as contrasted with their friends and traveling companions, never claimed any preternatural origin for their results. The reason for this may have been that as an entertainment it was more piquant and less provocative when every member of the audience could form his own solution. Writing to the American conjurer Houdini, Ira Davenport said in his old age, "We never in public affirmed our belief in spiritualism. That we regarded as no business of the public, nor did we offer our entertainment as the result of sleight of hand, or, on the other hand, as spiritualism. We let our friends and foes settle that as best they could between themselves, but, unfortunately, we were often the victims of their disagreements." Houdini further claimed that Davenport admitted that his results were normally affected, but Houdini has himself stuffed so many errors of fact into his book, A Magician Among the Spirits, and has shown such extraordinary bias on the whale question, that his statement carries no weight. The letter which he produces makes no such admission. A further statement quoted as being made by Ira Davenport is demonstrably false. It is that the instruments never left the cabinet. As a matter of fact, the time a representative was severely struck in the face by a floating guitar, his brow being cut, and on several occasions when a light was struck, instruments dropped all over the room. If Houdini has completely misunderstood this latter statement, it is not likely that he is very accurate upon the former, vide the appendix. It may be urged, and has been urged, by spiritualists as well as by skeptics that such mountebank psychic exhibitions are undignified and unworthy. There are many of us who think so, and yet there are many others who would echo these words of Mr. P.B. Randall: "The fault lies not with the immortals, but in us, for, as is the demand, so is the supply. If we cannot be reached in one way, we must be, and are, reached in another, and the wisdom of the eternal world gives the blind race just as much as it can bear and no more. If we are intellectual babes, we must put up with mental pap till our digestive capacities warrant and demand stronger food, and, if people can best be convinced of immortality by spiritual pranks and antics, the ends resorted to justify the means. The sight of a spectral arm in an audience of 3,000 persons will appeal to more hearts, make a deeper impression, and convert more people to a belief in their hereafter, in 10 minutes, than a whole regiment of preachers, no matter how eloquent, could in 5 years. 11. Other researches of Sir William Crookes, 1870-1874. Illustration of Sir William Crookes. The research into the phenomena of spiritualism by Sir William Crookes, or Professor Crookes, as he then was during the years from 1870 to 1874, is one of the outstanding incidents in the history of the movement. It is notable on account of the high scientific standing of the Inquirer, the stern and yet just spirit in which the inquiry was conducted, the extraordinary results, and the uncompromising declaration of faith which followed them. It has been a favorite device of the opponents of the movement to attribute some physical weakness or growing senility to each fresh witness to psychic truth, but none can deny that these researches were carried out by a man at the very zenith of his mental development, and that the famous career which followed was a sufficient proof of his intellectual stability. It is to be remarked that the result was to prove the integrity not only of the medium Florence Cook, with whom the more sensational results were obtained, but also that of D.D. Home and of Miss Kate Fox, who were also severely tested. Sir William Crookes, who was born in 1832 and died in 1919, was preeminent in the world of science. Elected a Fellow of the Royal Society in 1863, He received from this body in 1875 a Royal Gold Medal for his various chemical and physical researches, the Davy Medal in 1888, and the Sir Joseph Copley Medal in 1904. He was knighted by Queen Victoria in 1897, and was awarded the Order of Merit in 1910. He occupied the position of president at different tunes of the Royal Society, the Chemical Society, the Institution of Electrical Engineers, the British Association, and the Society for Psychical Research. His discovery of the new chemical element which he named thallium, his inventions of the radiometer, the spinthoscope, and the Crookes tube, only represent a slight part of his great research. He founded in 1859 the Chemical News, which he edited, and in 1864 he became editor of the Quarterly Journal of Science. In 1880 the French Academy of Sciences awarded him a gold medal and a prize of 3,000 francs in recognition of his important work. Crookes confesses that he began his investigations into psychical phenomena believing that the whole matter might prove to be a trick. His scientific brethren held the same view, and were delighted at the course he had adopted. Profound satisfaction was expressed because the subject was to be investigated by a man so thoroughly qualified. They had little doubt that what were considered to be the sham pretensions of spiritualism would now be exposed. One writer said, "If men like Mr. Crookes grapple with the subject, we shall soon know how much to believe." Drive, afterwards Professor, Balfour Stewart, in a communication to Nature, commended the boldness and honesty which had led Mr. Crookes to take this step. Crookes himself took the view that it was the duty of scientists to make such investigation. He writes, "It argues ill for the boasted freedom of opinion among scientific men that they have so long refused to institute a scientific investigation into the existence and nature of facts asserted by so many competent and credible witnesses, and which they are freely invited to examine when and where they please. For my own part, I too much value the pursuit of truth, and the discovery of any new fact in nature, to avoid inquiry because it appears to clash with prevailing opinions." In this spirit he began his inquiry. It should be stated, however, that though Professor Crookes was sternly critical as to the physical phenomena, already he had had acquaintance with the mental phenomena, and would appear to have accepted them. Possibly this sympathetic spiritual attitude may have aided him in obtaining his remarkable results, for it cannot be too often repeated, or because it is too often forgotten, that psychic research of the best sort is really psychic, and depends upon spiritual conditions. It is not the bumptious, self-opinionated man, sitting with a ludicrous want of proportion as a judge upon spiritual matters, who attains results, but it is he who appreciates that the strict use of reason and observation is not incompatible with humility of mind, and that courteous gentleness of demeanor which makes for harmony and sympathy between the inquirer and his subject. Crookes's less material inquiries seem to have begun in the summer of 1869. In July of that year he had sittings with the well-known medium, Mrs. Marshall, and in December with another famous medium, J. Morse. In July, 1869, D.D. Holm, who had been giving copyright answers in St. Petersburg, returned to London with a letter of introduction to Crookes from Professor Butleroff. An interesting fact emerges from a private diary kept by Crookes during his voyage to Spain in December, 1870, with the Eclipse expedition. Under the date December 31st, he writes, "I cannot help reverting in thought to this time last year. Nellie, his wife, and I were then sitting together in communion with dear departed friends, and as 12 o'clock struck they wished us many happy New Years. I feel that they are looking on now, and as space is no obstacle to them, they are, I believe, looking over my dear Nellie at the same time. Over us both I know there is one whom wheeler spirits as well as mortals bow down to as father and master, and it is my humble prayer to Hema the great good as the Mandarin calls Hema that he will continue his merciful protection to Nellie and me and our dear little family. May he also allow us to continue to receive spiritual communications from my brother who passed over the boundary when in a ship at sea more than 3 years ago." Life of Sir William Crookes, by E.E. Fournier d'Albe, 1923. He further adds New Year-loving greetings to his wife and children, and concludes, "And when the earthly years have ended, may we continue to spend still happier ones in the spirit land, glimpses of which I am occasionally getting." Miss Florence Cook, with whom Crookes undertook his classical series of experiments, was a young girl of 15 who was asserted to possess strong psychic powers, taking the rare shape of complete materialization. It would appear to have been a family characteristic, for her sister, Miss Kate Cook, was not less famous. There had been some squabble with an alleged exposure in which a Mr. Volkman had taken sides against Miss Cook, and in her desire for vindication she placed herself entirely under the protection of Mrs. Crookes, declaring that her husband might make any experiments upon her powers under his own conditions, and asking for no reward save that he should clear her character as a medium by giving his exact conclusions to the world. Fortunately, she was dealing with a man of unswerving intellectual honesty. We have had experience in these latter days of mediums giving themselves up in the same unreserved way to scientific investigation and being betrayed by the investigators, who had not the moral courage to admit those results which would have entailed their own public acceptance of the spiritual interpretation. Professor Crookes published a full account of his methods in the Quarterly Journal of Science, of which he was then editor. In his house at Mornington Road, a small study opened into the chemical laboratory, a door with a curtain separating the two rooms. Miss Cook lay entranced upon a couch in the inner room. In the outer, in subdued light, sat Crookes, with such other observers as he invited. At the end of a period which varied from 20 minutes to an hour, the materialized figure was built up from the ectoplasm of the medium. The existence of this substance and its method of production were unknown at that date, but subsequent research has thrown much light upon it, an account of which has been embodied in the chapter on ectoplasm. The actual effect was that the curtain was opened, and there emerged into the laboratory a female who was usually as different from the medium as two people could be. This apparition, which could move, talk, and act in all ways as an independent entity, is known by the name which she herself claimed as her own, Katie King. The natural explanation of the skeptic is that the two women were really the same woman, and that Katie was a clever impersonation of Florence. The objector could strengthen his case by the observation made not only by Crookes but by Miss Marriott and others, that there were times when Katie was very like Florence. Herein lies one of the mysteries of materialization which call for careful consideration rather than sneers. The author, sitting with Miss Bisnett, the famous American medium, has remarked the same thing: the psychic faces beginning when the power was weak by resembling those of the medium, and later becoming utterly unlike. Some speculators have imagined that the etheric form of the medium, her spiritual body, has been liberated by the trance, and is the basis upon which the other manifesting entities build up their own simulacra. However that may be, the fact has to be admitted, and it is paralleled by direct voice phenomena, where the voice often resembles that of the medium at first and then takes an entirely different tone, or divides into two voices speaking at the same time. However, the student has certainly the right to claim that Florence Cook and Katie King were the same individual until convincing evidence is laid before him that this is impossible. Such evidence Professor Crookes is very careful to give. The points of difference which he observed between Miss Cook and Katie are thus described. Katie's height varies. In my house I have seen her 6 inches taller than Miss Cook. Last night, with bare feet and not tiptoeing, she was 4.5 inches taller than Miss Cook. Katie's neck was bare last night, the skin was perfectly smooth both to touch and sight, whilst on Miss Cook's neck is a large blister, which under similar circumstances is distinctly visible and rough to the touch. Katie's ears are unpierced, whilst Miss Cook habitually wears earrings. Katie's complexion is very fair, while that of Miss Cook is very dark. Katie's fingers are much longer than Miss Cook's, and her face is also larger. In manners and ways of expression there are also many decided differences. In a later contribution, he adds, "Having seen so much of Katie lately, when she has been illuminated by the electric light, I am enabled to add to the points of difference between her and her medium which I mentioned in a former article. I have the most absolute certainty that Miss Cook and Katie are two separate individuals so far as their bodies are concerned. Several little marks on Miss Cook's face are absent on Katie's. Miss Cook's hair is so dark a brown as almost to appear black, a lock of Katie's, which is now before me, and which she allowed me to cut from her luxuriant dresses, having first traced it up to the scalp and satisfied myself that it actually grew there, is a rich golden auburn. On one evening I timed Katie's pulse. It beat steadily at 75, whilst Miss Cook's pulse a little time after was going at its usual rate of 90. On applying my ear to Katie's chest, I could hear a heart beating rhythmically inside, and pulsating even more steadily than did Miss Cook's heart when she allowed me to try a similar experiment after the S.A. Tilda copyright dance. Tested in the same way, Katie's lungs were found to be sounder than her medium's, for at the time I tried my experiment Miss Cook was under medical treatment for a severe cough. Crooks took 44 photographs of Katie King by the aid of electric light. Writing in The Spiritualist, 1874, p. 270, he describes the methods he adopted. During the week before Katie took her departure, she gave S.A. Tilda copyright dances of my house almost nightly, to enable me to photograph her by artificial light. 5 complete sets of photographic apparatus were accordingly fitted up for the purpose, consisting of 5 cameras, one of the whole plate size, 1 half plate, 1 quarter plate, and 2 binocular stereoscopic cameras, which were all brought to bear upon Katie at the same time on each occasion on which she stood for her portrait. 5 sensitizing and fixing baths were used, and plenty of plates were cleaned ready for use in advance, so that there might be no hitch or delay during the photographing operations, which were performed by myself, aided by one assistant. My library was used as a dark cabinet. It has folding doors opening into the laboratory. One of these doors was taken off its hinges, and a curtain suspended in its place to enable Katie to pass in and out easily. Those of our friends who were present were seated in the laboratory facing the curtain, and the cameras were placed a little behind them, ready to photograph Katie when she came outside, and to photograph anything also inside the cabinet, whenever the curtain was withdrawn for the purpose. Each evening there were 3 or 4 exposures of plates in the 5 cameras, giving at least 15 separate pictures at each S.A. Tilda copyright dance. Some of these were spoilt in the developing, and some in regulating the amount of light. Altogether I have 44 negatives, some inferior, some indifferent, and some excellent. Some of these photographs are in the author's possession, and surely there is no more wonderful impression upon any plate than that which shows Crooks at the height of his manhood, with this Angela, for such in truth she was, leaning upon his arm. The word angel may seem an exaggeration, but when another world spirit submits herself to the discomforts of temporary and artificial existence in order to convey the lesson of survival to a material and worldly generation, there is no more fitting term. Some controversy has arisen as to whether Crooks ever saw the medium and Katie at the same moment. Crooks says in the course of his report that he frequently followed Katie into the cabinet, and have sometimes seen her and her medium together, but most generally I have found nobody but the entranced medium lying on the floor, Katie and her white robes having instantaneously disappeared. Much more direct testimony, however, is given by Crooks in a letter to the Banner of Light, USA, which is reproduced in The Spiritualist, London, of July 17, 1874, p. 29. He writes, "In reply to your request, I beg to state that I saw Miss Cook and Katie together at the same moment, by the light of a phosphorus lamp, which was quite sufficient to enable me to see distinctly all I described. The human eye will naturally take in a wide angle, and thus the two figures were included in my field of vision at the same time, but the light being dim, and the two faces being several feet apart, I naturally turned the lamp and my eyes alternately from one to the other, when I desired to bring either Miss Cook's or Katie's face to that portion of my field of view where vision is most distinct. Since the occurrence here referred to took place, Katie and Miss Cook have been seen together by myself and eight other persons, in my own house, illuminated by the full blaze of the electric light. On this occasion Miss Cook's face was not visible, as her head had to be closely bound up in a thick shawl, but I specially satisfied myself that she was there. An attempt to throw the light direct onto her uncovered face, when entranced, was attended with serious consequences. The camera, too, emphasizes the points of difference between the medium and the form. He says, "One of the most interesting of the pictures is one in which I am standing by the side of Katie. She has her bare foot upon a particular part of the floor. Afterwards I dressed Miss Cook like Katie, placed her and myself in exactly the same position, and we were photographed by the same cameras, placed exactly as in the other experiment, and illuminated by the same light. When these two pictures are placed over each other, the two photographs of myself coincide exactly as regards stature, etc. But Katie is half a head taller than Miss Cook, and looks a big woman in comparison with her. In the breadth of her face, in many of the pictures, she differs essentially in size from her medium, and the photographs show several other points of difference." Crookes pays a high tribute to the medium, Florence Cook. "The Almost Daily essay tilde copyright answers with which Miss Cook has lately favored me have proved a severe tax upon her strength, and I wish to make the most public acknowledgement of the obligations I am under to her for her readiness to assist me in my experiments. Every test that I have proposed she has at once agreed to submit to with the utmost willingness. She is open and straightforward in speech, and I have never seen anything approaching the slightest symptom of a wish to deceive. Indeed, I do not believe she could carry on a deception if she were to try, and if she did she would certainly be found out very quickly, for such a line of action is altogether foreign to her nature. And to imagine that an innocent schoolgirl of 15 should be able to conceive and then successfully carry out for 3 years so gigantic an imposture as this, and in that time should submit to any test which might be imposed upon her, should bear the strictest scrutiny, should be willing to be searched at any time, either before or after a essay tilde copyright dance, and should meet with even better success in my own house than at that of her parents, knowing that she visited me with the express object of submitting to strict scientific tests, or to imagine, I say, the Katie King of the last 3 years to be the result of imposture, does more violence to one's reason and common sense than to believe her to be what she herself affirms. Researches in the Phenomena of Spiritualism." Illustration of Crookes's test to show that the medium and the spirit were separate entities. After a drawing by S. Dragon. "Granting that a temporary form was built up from the ectoplasm of Florence Cook, and that this form was then occupied and used by an independent being who called herself Katie King, we are still faced with the question, who was Katie King? To this we can only give the answer which she gave herself, while admitting that we have no proof of it. She declared that she was the daughter of John King, who had long been known among spiritualists as the presiding spirit at S.A. tilde copyright answers held for material phenomena. His personality is discussed later in the chapter upon the Eddy brothers and Mrs. Holmes, to which the reader is referred. Her earth name had been Morgan, and King was rather the general title of a certain class of spirits than an ordinary name. Her life had been spent 200 years before, in the reign of Charles II, in the island of Jamaica. Whether this be true or not, she undoubtedly conformed to the part, and her general conversation was consistent with her account. One of the daughters of Professor Crookes wrote to the author and described her vivid recollection of tales of the Spanish Main told by this kindly spirit to the children of the family. She made herself beloved by all. Mrs. Crookes wrote, a 2 S.A. tilde copyright dance with Miss Cook in our own house when one of our sons was an infant of 3 weeks old. Katie King, a materialized spirit, expressed the liveliest interest in him and asked to be allowed to see the baby. The infant was accordingly brought into the S.A. Tilda copyright dance room and placed in the arms of Katie, who, after holding him in the most natural way for a short time, smilingly gave him back again. Professor Crooks has left it on record that her beauty and charm were unique in his experience.